From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
This episode of Fragmented is brought to you by American Express. I'm here to let you know that their Android team is hiring. If you love the idea of working in a team which values testability, customer experience, and proper Android UI design guideline support, all while getting things done right the first time, well then, my friend, keep listening. The Android team at American Express prides themselves on shipping a high-quality experience to end users, all while implementing the latest and greatest technologies at hand. For example, what about Kotlin? Yeah, they've been using it for 2+ years. It's what we write in every single day. Design patterns? Yeah, they got you covered, from UI patterns to typical Ginga 4 patterns. They've seen it all, and they know when to use the right tool for the right job. Well, what about testing? Like integration, functional, and unit testing, you might be wondering. Ha, you're in luck again. They have a huge test suite that is run on every single PR to ensure that no regressions are hit. Now, those are going to be functional, integration, and unit tests, and so forth. And get this, you're given the time to write the test to ensure your changes don't break anything and ensure your changes work. Yes, you're given the time to write your test. Now, let me go off script here. How many companies are happy that you spend extra time writing tests? Well, probably very few. I can't count many on one hand that have been happy with me spending more time writing tests. They probably wanted to, or you probably wanted to, but you just needed to ship the code faster. Well, American Express, they know that getting things done right the first time matters, and testing is paramount, which means that quality is paramount. Now, maybe that sounds a bit scary because you've not written a ton of tests. Well, you're in luck then, because the team at American Express is full of fantastic folks who will help mold you into becoming the best version of your current self when it comes to developing professional Android apps. And here's another great thing about American Express. They support you for being part of the community. Now, for example, do you want to speak at conferences? Totally, they support you. You want to build your writing skills on the tech blog at americanexpress.io? Go for it. Again, they support you. What about contributing to open source? Again, they support you. Start writing that open source. If you want to be part of the community in any way, from speaking to coding to running a user group, etc., you guessed it, they'll support you. And finally, they get the whole work-life balance thing. It's not a myth. The benefits are great, and you're not required to work 80-hour weeks. And well, to tell you the truth, that just makes life a lot easier. How can I say this with so much confidence? To tell you the truth, I've been working with American Express for over 2 years now, and I've seen this all firsthand. So if you're interested in coming to work alongside of me, follow the link in the show notes and be sure to tell them that I sent you. I hope to see you around.
I also want to thank Nevercode, our sponsor. Nevercode is a continuous integration service for mobile pros. It's that simple. The company was born from a very simple idea: help mobile app developers build better apps faster. The service helps developers build, test, and deploy both native and cross-platform mobile applications. They do this automatically without any human interaction. And you all know, I usually love that. Always trust our machines to do the mundane tasks. The humans can do the more interesting stuff. They also strive to make sure that you have less configuration headache when using the service. But here's what's really cool about them. As a mobile-first CI service, Nevercode is taking the Flutter revolution extremely seriously. They now support projects exclusively built on Flutter. If you have a Flutter project, they provide a pretty kick-ass CI for Flutter, so definitely give them a shot. Now, you might be thinking, well, what we have kind of works. Do I really need a CI service? Is it worth it? Nevercode has gone and analyzed more than 75,000 builds. They did the math and calculated that their product saves up to 20% of developers' workday. Think about that for a second. That's about 10 weeks per year. I'll paste the link in the show notes to the blog post where they talk about this in some detail. CI is a must-have these days if you want to build a professional, stable mobile app. And if you want to give Nevercode a shot, head on over to nevercode.io for a 14-day free trial. They also have a lot of good resources for mobile app developers on their blog, nevercode.io/blog. So you should definitely check it out. Thanks again for sponsoring today's show, Nevercode. So Don, I wanted to talk to you about this other recent thing. This is more like a follow-up from a previous show that we did where you talked about like the functional and UI testing. And I thought it was an interesting bit and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So recently, I was working on the Instacart code base, and we had a UI espresso test failed. And the way this test worked was it was testing essentially that a certain item was being displayed in the recycler view. Now, for those who have worked with espresso, typically with the recycler views, the standard practice is to do an on data load, if I'm remembering that right. You know, on data load, you want to like get to the right sort of cell, and then from there, the item you test to see if it sort of satisfies the condition that you're testing for. So recently I had this test fail, but the way I did this test was I didn't do any of the on data load stuff. Instead, what I did is I just, there's in the view actions, there's this one called swipe up. Mm-hmm. So essentially what happens is I knew that there was this cell that was just below the viewport in that like it was at the bottom of like this list. So all I did was I just said, hey, swipe up. And that basically like mimics an actual swiping action on mm-hmm. On the screen. And then I tested to see if that view exists or not, you know, I think it was like an on view with text or something along those lines. So that started failing. The reason it started failing was because we had a vector image being displayed in the first view cell. And because it was a vector image, for some reason, it went unbounded. So the size of that image blew up. And so what happened was I actually needed to swipe up multiple times in order to reach the end of the cell. I paused for a second. I was like, huh, that actually in some ways is a good test, because what I'm testing to see, and this was an important enough card where I needed to be right after, you know, a single swipe. Like having it be right at the bottom was not something that I thought was favorable. So in some ways, like, you know, it actually did detect something wrong. My first assumption was, oh, the way to fix this is I should really switch this to like an on data load, which is what is usually recommended when you test with espresso on recycler views. But for this one, I was like, actually, I'm going to keep it because I think I like the idea that it mimics what the user would see in many ways, right? And I remember in the previous episode, you talked about how you've been moving towards the direction where all you care about is just to see, test what the user is seeing, like the final output. So I was curious to like hear your thoughts on how you would have handled something similar.
Definitely. Just as a caveat too, just everyone knows, I'm not like anti-unit testing. I want to make sure that's out there. I actually do write a lot of unit tests, but
it's funny because like, yeah, if you knew Don, you'd know the guy's like crazy about his testing. So.
But how at first, when you first kind of, you know, you brought this up to me previously, my first assumption was like, well, of course you need to use on data loaded. That's the problem. You should have just scrolled right to it. And then you said something that I sat with for a little bit, and it made sense to me even more, because you said, hey, the image is too big, which then forced this item down further, which means I had to do two swipes. And when I translate that into product speak, what that says to me is, if the user, as a user, I should only have to swipe once to be above the fold so I can interact with some call to action. That's what I see it as, which means most likely when you swipe up, you have some type of action that you want the user to take. And if it goes to two actions, you'll notice, or usually based on some research, you'll notice that the conversion rate of that particular call to action will then decrease significantly. So that's the actual bug, is that, oh, it took me two swipes. So at that point in time, it seems like you should be leaving that test alone, to me, saying, all right, it should only be one swipe. I should actually write another test now to test to make sure that each cell is only a particular height given a certain screen size.
Oh, interesting. I see.
So then at that point, it'll always be one swipe to get to this call to action or whatever it's supposed to be. Because then I can verify for some reason I put too much text in there, an image is too big, whatever. At that point, it'll then just fail based upon that test. And I can see in my continuous integration, cell height too large, failed, whatever. And I'm like, oh, well, let's go see what's going on there. Instead of being like single swipe to call to action failed.
I think they're both valid, but then it's kind of separates them. So there's two different ones saying, all right, this one tests the height, this one tests to make sure I can get to it with one swipe.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And the other thing that I was thinking about, because obviously a natural question that folks might ask is like, oh, isn't this test super dependent on the size of the device? It absolutely is. If you have a tiny device, obviously it's going to have more swipes. Typically, and again, like this is the lazy side of me talking, typically the way I do it is my test device is actually a tiny device. I think it's like an Android One. It's like one of those devices that's like really tiny. When I'm developing, I usually have that connected. So like my when I'm doing the UI portion of like my feature, usually I test it on that phone. And so that's why I run like my tests. I run everything on this. And when it translates, it also translates to larger devices because if your device screen has like the viewport is bigger or like I like by the way I like the term you use the fold. It's like the web, that's what the web used basically, and I think that's also it translates to the mobile world. You'll add a link to the show notes if folks don't understand what the fold is, but basically if it's content that's below the fold on a very small device, then the chances are pretty high that it would be anyway up on like, you know, bigger devices. So but obviously the probably the better way to handle this is like, as Don said, like also making sure that we have an additional test to make sure that the height is taken care of. But in this case, it sort of like did work for me. So
yeah. Now I do think there's also another way to look at this too, is like, all right, you did the swipe up. Now, what if you really don't care how big the image is? What if you don't care how big the cell height is and you only care that this is somewhere in that list? Then at that point, in my opinion, that's when you go use something like OnData. So it just goes directly to it. Is it there? Cool. If not, fail.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I 100% agree. Have you found yourself recently changing anything else around like the way you write your tests? Have you found yourself writing more UI tests, less unit tests? What has that thought process been like?
I still rely quite a bit on the UI tests. There are instances now based upon whatever I guess you could say whatever pattern we're using, that certain actions take place. And what I mean by that is that when we call this API, this data is called, we then we're then making sure that the screen is set up in a certain way and so forth. But I still feel a lot of that could be done with just a UI test. The problem is on Android is that the UI tests are just so slow that to just like get a faster feedback loop, I find myself writing unit test where I can, and then kind of verifying a happy path, an error state, and then perhaps a you know, like a loading state or something like that too.
That makes I like that idea,
but it's kind of hard. Like I think for me, I've been thinking about testing a lot recently because in my opinion, like if you think what's the most difficult part of testing an Android application? And a lot of people say, well, it's UI testing. Of course it is. But what makes it difficult? Well, it's because I have to write these, you know, larger framework tests. And you start going down this whole five whys approach of like, well, why is it difficult? And why? And what you, my opinion, what ends up happening is you get down to the lower level. What's the real problem is? You have an API. And that API has to be mocked out somehow.
Oh, interesting.
So if you have some people are like, well, we have a staging server and it just hits the staging server. Well, that's not hermetic. I can't guarantee that's going to always work. What if the network's down? And so then some people will say, well, we just completely mock out our repository layer. I'm like, well, then how do you know your repository layer is working correctly? Like you don't. So like there's always this thing of like there's a trade-off here. And so I feel like the biggest difficulty a lot of folks have getting going is kind of getting that network layer out of the way. And that's, I think, where things like WireMock really help out, and things like Mock Web Server, if you can configure them correctly, make your life a lot easier. That's a question for you. What do you folks do in regards to this type of approach? Do you provide mock data? Do you use WireMock, some other tool, or what?
Oh, it's the same thing. I mean, we don't use WireMock per se, but that's why like Dagger is so important to, you know, our testing setup. What I typically tend to do is I mock the network layer. But the way I do it is literally I paste, and I think I maybe talked about this before, I paste raw JSON files that I would see from my server. So I try to keep it as close as I can there, which is pretty much the same. I mean, there's no reason I can't use something like WireMock, I guess, because I imagine that's basically what it does, right? You can say, hey, mock this and like provide this response. I think like from the early days, I've written that aspect of like the tool chain myself. So essentially, I just like mock at the network layer and then say, hey, if this request comes in, then point to this JSON. I have like a JSON parser that, and the advantage is I also have like other tests as I'm building a feature out. Sometimes I want to write tests against just JSON response to see that it's mocked in the right, to see that it's parsed. So I use that same parser to mock. So because the other problem is like, oh, well, what if this parser is not the exact same parser that I'm using, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I try to cover my base that way. But it's the same idea. Essentially, like that JSON file, I mocked at the network layer. So it's one behind my repository. And this is why like things like Dagger help a lot, because I'm injecting those endpoints, those network endpoints on Retrofit directly. I mock it at that layer.
Okay, so so if you're using Retrofit, you'll have like that, you know, whatever customer service, which is just the interface with the endpoints on it, right? And you're going to mock that out, correct?
Exactly. That's basically what I do.
So then at that point, you can still mock out like, hey, I'm going to mock this out so it returns a 500 error technically, and then you can test out what happens from there.
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously, there are different cases of errors. Sometimes there's like a timeout exception where like it's at the Retrofit layer, but sometimes like the API comes back and like you said, you know, like a 500 response or like maybe like a 400 response, and you want to present the output that the server gives back in a presentable way. I need to test those too, right? Because sometimes mm-hmm. I need to make sure that we are displaying that. So this makes that like a tad bit easier.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think if more people can, that's a big missing component, in my opinion, of folks getting started with a lot of this is like, all right, here, how do I mock out this API? What tool do I need to use? It's a lot of custom solutions. And even for mm-hmm. some of the ones that are out of the box, like, you know, Mock Web Server or WireMock, et cetera, you do have to do quite a bit of configuration to get everything up and running.
I wish there was like some service, you know, because these days, I know like the tooling team and a lot of them are doing a good job with like making a lot of that boilerplate easy. I wish there was just some solution that gave me that benefit, you know, like, because even with that, and I've not used WireMock as extensively as I think you have, but how exactly is it to get to that point where you're mocking things, you know, because that's like the trouble for me, right? Even with Dagger, like, and this is like one of the things that I have a problem with in terms of like the boilerplate with Dagger, even like the testing portion, getting your UI and Espresso tests running, it isn't as easy as it should be, right? Because if it was just like, oh, just do these two things and boom, you have it up and running, it isn't that easy. You got to make sure that your modules are wired up correctly. You got to make sure that you're like wiring that stuff up. It's just, I feel in many ways, what if that was something that the Android team gave us? Like, you know, just, hey, you're up and running with mockable tests in like, you know, in with this three-step wizard. Do you think that would be like beneficial?
Oh, totally. Especially if it came from Android and Google, where they said like, all right, look, there's a, you know, part of the support library. Now we've released this new thing that allows you to stub out, you know, network requests. And here's what it'll do. Even if it started off at a real simple level, like, hey, right now it just does JSON, because you can look at some real complicated stuff with HTTP. Like, okay, now we need to stream some stuff. Now we're just going to do bytes. Now we're going to do like, oh, you know. Yeah, you can get to some real complex things. So even if it was at a high level, it would work. Because I imagine like if you want to simulate, all right, a file download, how do you do that? Like, I don't know. like that's one of those things like, I'll let UA, like QA test it, you know? there are ways, but it's just how much, you know, what's the reward for writing all that code right now?
Yeah, and I wonder if that's something that can be even at like, you know, the Retrofit layer, or because I imagine that's where like most of the mocking happens. It's like at the network layer. But yeah, or maybe like a tool that just enables, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just thinking aloud about this problem. But what if we made it that simple, just like a one-step process, and you could just get to the point? Because the actual Espresso tests are in some ways a lot of fun to write, because like you run it and then you see it automated, you're like, oh, wonderful, I never have to test this. So I think developers enjoy that aspect of it. And I'm sure once you get them to that point where it's all set up, and I've noticed this also in our code base, right? If I already have it wired up, then writing additional tests, people don't have a problem at all. It's only that friction when they have to like set it up for a new activity, that you have to like make sure that your modules are wired up correctly, you have like the right dependencies, and you know they are mocking it at the right layer. Just getting up and running, that initial time takes so long that it almost deters people from testing. So what if we could just make that process like simple? If we could just, boom, you know, you get to that point, I'm sure like we'll start to see like a prolific, explosion of people writing tests. So, and that's a good thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think I need to write a few blog posts then. Because this is something I feel very passionate about, because there are times, like you said, I'll sit down to write a new feature or something like that, and there's nothing wired up for the tests. And the biggest part of not even procrastination, it's just like I'm almost avoiding writing the test because I know how much work it's going to be. Like, I don't want to do that. But I know at the same time, and this kind of makes me go back to the fundamentals, it's like, all right, what makes me feel good when I write software? To know that it works. Well, how do I know that it works? I can either run it and walk through it. I know that it works right now. In 10 seconds, I don't know if it works. So what makes me feel really good is when I can actually write a test and I can actually see it pass. And what I really love to do is I love to fire up a test. Usually it's going to be a UI test, especially. And that's the thing I think folks should kind of remember here is like, if you don't have any tests, in my opinion, the best tests you can have are these full functional tests, like end to end, because that's going to, you know, does it validate? Does the app start? Can I log in? You just tested so much of your app just doing those simple things. So if I can actually build my screen, if I want to build a screen out, I want to create that basic test. And I like to actually write it. And this is kind of the whole red, green refactor thing. I like to write it so it fails. Like, does this text show up on the screen? No, it fails. And I think I heard this from Michael Bailey or something like this. He said, he replied to one of my tweets once, and he said, never trust a test that you haven't seen fail first. And I completely agree with that. Like if it passes the first time, a lot of times I'll go back in and tweak it so it fails. Be like, all right, is it still going to fail? And it fails, and I'll fix it. Okay, good. It does work the way I thought it was going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you should, the red, green, like the cycle is just super powerful. Do you think, I mean, I know that goes in a little into like test-driven development. Is that something that you still feel? Because I know like from our roots are similar in that, like, you know, we come from some of the Rails background where like a lot of the prominent developers in the Rails world are like very big on TDD and test-driven development. Is that something that you have like strong opinions on these days, like for Android development, or is it more, well, you just take it as it goes?
I don't have strong opinions on TDD saying if you don't do testing like this, then you're wrong. Not at all, because there's a lot, more often than not, I find myself in a situation where I don't know how to write this thing. And I'm like, all right, well, they say I should start with a test. Well, I don't even know what test to write. And when I start feeling that way, that's when I kind of know like, all right, well, I'm just going to keep walking up the stack further. And it usually ends at the UI. And so like, all right, I'll just write a UI test. And my goal is to just get it passing. And then that will give me confidence. And then at that point in time, I can keep running it to refactor if I want to. But I don't definitely follow, hey, it has to be, you know, you have to write your code red, green, refactor. A lot of times I might just sit there and spike out some code. Like, is this even going to work? I'll fire up a test project, kind of pull in a library, like just playing around, learning is like a playground. And then once I feel confident, like, okay, now I know how it should work. Let me go write a test to verify that I'm doing something correctly in my real app, and then go from there.
I like that. And I mean, you bring up a good point. Like the other thing for me that I've found, because again, like I was also at one point like a very big TDD sort of like head, in that I would very prominently, you know, ask people to like follow that route. With mobile development, especially with Android, like that just shifted. And you're absolutely right. Like there are times when I was like, I don't even know where to start. Like, you know, what modules do I need? What modules do I need mocked out? Like I have no clue. So these days I've found myself very comfortable with that hybrid approach, like you said, where I'll just like spike the feature out or get it to a point where I'm at least seeing like the screen render with all like the necessary modules. And then I'll go back and then write the test so that it fails. Or I know, but that aspect of like making sure that the test fails is so critical. I feel like you're absolutely right. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're enforcing TDD. It's just that you're seeing that your tests work, you know, like, and I think that should just be like the basic case. Like one of my friends, Gordon, who I think you've also met, like from my wedding party days, he actually in his day wrote this, it was like this chaos testing framework. And what it would do was it would run through your whole test cases. And like he had this project where he basically wrote a good bajillion tests. And these were unit tests, so they ran really fast. But what he would do is he would randomly, he had like this framework that would randomly delete a line of code or remove a line of code so that it would basically compile. And he would make sure that at least one of his tests were failing. And that's how he would, test to see if he had the right kind of tests and the coverage, which is kind of crazy. I wouldn't never even begin to attempt something like that on Android just because there's so many other problems because it's a compile time language. And then when you remove that line of code, you have to make sure you're not removing a declaration of sorts. But I just thought it was fascinating. It's the same approach that's being done manually with our red, green cycle approach, right? Where we are hey, no, let's first make sure that this test is failing and then our code is actually making it pass, right? Mm-hmm. So the test is truly testing something, so...
Yeah, having that red one is key. I don't know how many times this has happened to you, but I know it's happened to me a number of times. You write some code, you're kind of not confident about it. You write it out, you kind of compile it. It compiles cool. You run it in the emulator, whatever you're running it, and everything works the first time. And this rarely happens, but it works the first time. And you stop and you look at it with heavy eye of skepticism. You're like, no, this can't be right. And so that's kind of one of those same things all right, you got to write that test to fail. Otherwise, I'm going to look at it with the skepticism really, really closely. This can't be right. I always screw something up.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess and part of that is experience, right? I was like, no way. That was way too complex. No. That can't be that simple.
That shouldn't have worked.
Oh, I love it. Good stuff.
Once again, we'd like to thank American Express for sponsoring today's episode. If you're interested in joining one of the best Android teams out there, please follow the link in the show notes and go ahead and tell them that I sent you. Looking forward to hearing from you soon.
I also want to thank Nevercode for sponsoring the show. Nevercode is a CI service that's one of the first that's taking the Flutter revolution pretty seriously. You can head on over to nevercode.io for a 14-day free trial. They also have a bunch of interesting resources for mobile app development over at their blog, nevercode.io/blog. My thanks to Nevercode again for sponsoring the show. That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.